Good evening. My name is Herb, and I'm an alcoholic. Hi, welcome to our 12 Traditions Workshop. Please join me in the prayer for an open mind. God, please set aside everything that I think I know about myself, my brokenness, the 12 traditions in you, for an open mind and a new experience with myself, my brokenness, the 12 traditions, and especially you. This is the foreword to the pamphlet AA Tradition, How It Developed by Bill Wilson, published in 1955. How shall we AAs best preserve our unity? When an alcoholic applies the 12 steps of our recovery program to his personal life, his disintegration stops and his unification begins. The power which now holds him together in one piece overcomes those forces which had rent him apart. Exactly the same principle applies to each AA group and to Alcoholics Anonymous as a whole. So long as the ties which bind us together prove far stronger than those forces which would divide us if they could, all will be well. We shall be secure as a movement. Our essential unity will remain a certainty. May we never forget that without permanent unity, we can offer little lasting relief to those scores of thousands yet to join us in the quest for freedom. It is the purpose of this workshop to review and discuss each of the 12 traditions so we may better understand and apply them to our fellowship and to our personal lives. Please join me in a few minutes of meditation on that intention. Please join me in a serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Thank you, David. We're here to talk about our second legacy, unity, and to review the 12 traditions. Crosstalk is allowed in a loving and supportive manner. To be informed and helpful are our only goals. And as a beginning kind of a warm-up to the Traditions Workshop, we'll be talking about Tradition 6 tonight. And let's get a perspective on what that is from looking at the tradition itself, the short form. An AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. And of course, the primary purpose, as we've seen from prior traditions, is to carry the message to the suffering alcoholic. The long form, and it is quite long, problems of money, property, and authority. Interesting, they changed the verbiage. I hope you paid attention to that. It said in the short form, money, property, and prestige, and in the long form, it says money, property, and authority. May easily divert us from our primary spiritual aim. So they've upped the ante in the same way the short and long form of Tradition 5 were different. In the long form of Tradition 5, it said that each group is a spiritual entity, and now it talks about in the long form we have a primary spiritual aim in contrast to just a primary purpose in the short form. I think these small, seemingly insignificant changes are actually quite significant. We think, therefore, that any considerable property of genuine use to AA should be separately incorporated and managed, thus dividing the material from the spiritual. An AA group, as such, should never go into business. Secondary aids to AA, such as clubs or hospitals, which require much property or administration, ought to be incorporated and so set apart that if necessary, they can be freely discarded by the groups. Hence, such facilities ought not to use the AA name. Their management should be the sole responsibility of those people who financially support them. For groups, AA managers are usually preferred, but hospitals, as well as other places of recuperation, ought to be well outside AA and medically supervised. While an AA group may cooperate with anyone, such cooperation ought never go so far as affiliation or endorsement, actual or implied, pretty strict guidelines, even implied endorsement or affiliation is to be avoided. An AA group can bind itself to no one. So I had some thoughts in preparing for tonight's discussion. The steps transform the person. It turns us inside out from the self-centered person to the other-centered person, the steps, generally. The traditions generally are byproducts of the steps. They're used by the group to monitor itself within the group, to monitor itself with other groups, and to monitor itself with the community at large. They're used by individuals as guidelines and principles within ourselves in terms of our own personal relationships within the group, in terms of the group dynamics, and within the community in terms of the general application of these principles. The goal of the steps and the traditions is unity, integration, versus disintegration. Both the steps and the traditions, the unity of the individual within the individual, the steps, the unity of the individual within the community, both at the group level, amongst the group level, and in the general community, a oneness. Integration versus disintegration. And step six has tradition six has a particular affinity towards step six. Step six is addressing our character defects. These are the impediments to our relationship with power. They help to reduce or eliminate even these impediments. Tradition six is a guideline for detachment of these impediments from our primary purpose to carry the message. Because power, property, prestige, and authority are distractions from that primary purpose. So we have to ask ourselves, at least I did, how do I allocate my time and energy? Because how I behave, what I do, describes what my priorities are, describes what my values are. How I spend my time and my energy reveals very overtly what my values are, what my priorities are. And there seems to be a reciprocal relationship. The more I'm on purpose, the less distracted I am. The more distracted I am, the less I am on purpose. They reside together, distraction and purpose. But it's a reciprocal relationship, like a teeter-totter. The more I'm on purpose, the less distracted. The more I'm distracted, the less purpose. It's very much like the discussion on the fear inventory when we were looking at step four. And we're talking about trust versus fear, a reciprocal relationship. The more trust I have, the less fear I have. The more fear I have, the less trust I have. Mutually reciprocal, but existing together within us. And it is also a reciprocal relationship. The more I trust myself, the less I trust God. The more I trust God, perhaps the less I trust myself. Although even when I said that last night in conducting the Tradition 6 at the workshop in Palos Verdes, I had this insight to it, that there may not be a reciprocal relationship at some level of spiritual development and emotional development. The more I trust God, the more I trust myself. The more I trust myself, the more I trust God, which was a wonderful kind of like a glimpse there at spiritual evolution. And what I do know is from my personal experience, the more I take care of my primary purpose, my relationship with God and my service to the community, the more I am taken care of. The more I take care of steps 11 and 12, the more I'm taken care of. Okay, so let's get into tradition 6 by looking at the assignments. And we'll go to take a look at Language of the Heart, page 83. By the way, we have a new fresh supply of Language of the Heart. If you don't have it, we have it now. And you're welcome to purchase it for your own library and use during this workshop. Looking at page 83, are there any highlights on that page that anybody would like to offer us? And John is setting the model here for us. I believe it's on, and he's going right to the mic. Thank you.
I'm John. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, John.
Yeah, that second paragraph kind of says it all. This tradition declares in substance that the accumulation of money, property, and the unwanted personal authority so often generated by material wealth comprise a cluster of serious hazards against which an AA group must ever be on guard.
Yeah, I've seen it rip families apart when the will is read. All right, yeah. An otherwise together family comes falling apart when the wealth is distributed. And that's really unfortunate. But it also may speak to the fact that it was a facade anyway from the beginning. Anybody else have George?
Yeah, I had highlighted that whole paragraph, but I was struck by the unwanted personal authority so often generated by material wealth. Mm. Just that phrase itself, that wealth kind of imbues in somebody authority, which is not necessarily warranted.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And I mean,
it just comes with the territory.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Nicole.
Nicole Al-Anon. Strongly expressed is the opinion that even clubs should not bear the AA name, that they ought to be separately incorporated and managed by those individual AAs who need or want clubs enough to financially support them. My question here is, I live in an area where I see AA in Spanish all the time, and the clubs are, I mean, it's very clear what it is because it says what it is. And so
is it in Spanish?
It is.
Do you know what it says? We had this discussion last night.
Sweet. yes, I do.
Oh, what does it say?
You're asking me to speak Spanish? Alcoholics Anonymous?
I'm asking you to translate.
Oh, it says Alcoholics Anonymous.
No, it doesn't. The club that I'm referring to had a specific reference. It had the AA logo and the AA symbol.
Mm-hmm.
But the Spanish underneath says something quite different.
We'll have to pay closer attention to that.
The Spanish underneath was translated, this is a place where AA meets. It's not an AA building. It's not an AA club.
Thank you.
Yeah. So, it could be differently stated there because a lot of people aren't familiar with the traditions, but that was quite in keeping with the traditions, all right, because we don't have AA clubs. We have clubs where AA meet. But we don't have AA clubs, at least by tradition.
George Barrel, alcoholic. Well, I see the AA symbol by itself, and you know, also in Spanish, seem to be a lot of them in Spanish. Alcoholics Anonymous.
Yeah.
That by itself, you know, does that endorse? That's a question.
Endorse what? I don't know. Well, you'd have to see it in context, wouldn't you?
Tom, alcoholic.
Tom.
I had an experience in the year 2000. I was encouraged to attend the International in Minneapolis, St. Paul. And the fella suggested that I design a button because they had done that in the past. It's a tradition at Internationals. People trade buttons and mementos from all over the world.
Yeah.
So I commissioned to have, I think, 3,000 buttons made. And halfway through the process, the person producing the button said, whoa, this is a copyright symbol. You have to get permission to have this.
What year was that?
in 2000. And so I thought, oh boy, you know, I'm shot down. So I called New York.
Yep.
And New York sent me a letter, and they discussed in the letter that at some time in the 80s or 90s,
that's right,
gold, jewelry, T-shirts, there were all sorts of items being marketed by people all over the country with the AA symbol on it. And they couldn't fight and protect their copyright from each individual party that was producing these. So New York decided that they would remove the symbol from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous because they didn't want to be aligned with any outside commercial operation. And they said, you know, it's fine, we surrender. The money could be much better spent translating a book into Yugoslavian or whatever, and go ahead and make your button. And they sent me the letter, and I still have that letter today. Very interesting.
Thank you for bringing it up, because AA released the copyright because they were tired of litigating. And they said, we're not going to use our time and your resources to do this, so we release the copyright into the general domain and we'll take it out of the book. So, yeah, thank you for sharing that. And I hope that worked out for you at the convention.
Hi, Kim Allen.
Kim.
So, the end of the page, we would thus divide the spiritual from the material, confine the AA movement to its sole aim, and ensure, however wealthy as individuals we may become, that AA itself shall always remain poor.
Yeah.
We dare not risk the distractions of corporate wealth. And, you know, once again, the traditions are deepening the whole spiritual aim message for me, not only in my steps, because I know when I look at myself as an individual and I make money my higher power, then my life is unmanageable because I'm trying to figure everything out. I'm in fear and I'm trying to control it.
Yeah.
And so what really struck me is, once again, the spiritual aim, you know, that the spiritual life is more important than the physical life. Mm-hmm. And once, like, that is my focus and the way I behave in all manners, individually, group, it all comes together. And I like that it says, however wealthy, that AA itself shall always remain poor, because there's more of a richness inside, even though the monetary may support that value.
Right.
You know.
Well, and what they mean by poor here is poor in spirit. I mean, I don't know what the annual budget is, but it's in the millions. And 10 million? 10 million. And they keep a reserve of 1 year's gross budget. They keep a reserve of $10 million. And they have a staff of 120 people that they're paying. So, I mean, there's a lot of money going through this place. And, you know, it's a well-run business. But they're not attached to the money. They won't receive gifts more than, as we talked about, I think earlier, $2,000 or $3,000. I think they lived it to three now. From any one individual per year, and they will never take money from a non-alcoholic. They will return it. They've had wills that have left them hundreds of thousands of dollars, and when the check came, they returned it. But, I mean, that's in the spirit of the traditions. Corporate poverty, the spirit of poverty, not to be poor, but to be not attached to the money, all right? So you can be a millionaire and have the spirit of poverty. That would be my preference. Yes. So how about page 84? Do we have any highlights on page 84 that we haven't looked at? Please.
The paragraph before the last. It's the message, not the place. It's the talk, not the alms. Just places to meet and talk. That's about all AA needs.
Yeah, the core of our AA procedure is one alcoholic talking to another. Money, he says, is a necessary nuisance. Nice attitude. Yeah, detachment from material to focus on the spiritual. That's the bottom line on that. Please.
Bonnie, addict.
Bonnie.
Other organizations do a lot of good with money. Why not AA?
That's a question that they ask, and they do a lot of good with money as long as they don't get attached to it. And so it's in the context, George.
Hi, George Brown again. The answer is in the next paragraph.
Go ahead.
It says, but money is not the lifeblood of AA. With us, it is very secondary.
Right.
Even in small quantities, it is scarcely more than a necessary nuisance.
Yep. Yeah, really, really, really. Okay, let's take a look at tradition 6 in the 12 and 12. There's 4 pages here. We'll start on page 155, taking a look at the highlights on that page. Anybody have a comment that they would like to talk about? All right.
Linda Allen on Encoda. The second paragraph in the middle there. We'd gather up derelicts from skid rows, sort out those who could get well, and make it possible for the rest to earn their livelihood in a kind of quarantine confinement. I have to say that summarizes the spirit of a lot of my flights of fancy and the way that I would fix the world.
Right. Yeah, and they're trying to be compassionate about the need, and yet at the same time we need to stay focused. And it says, in fact, we felt, and this was in the early days before the tradition, duty-bound to throw the whole weight of the AA name behind any meritorious cause. But know that we cannot do that. There's lots of great causes, and you're welcome as an individual to contribute in any way that you can and want to, but not attach the AA name to the cause. So you can't have a polio run for AA or AA-sponsored polio run. Sorry, just that's not the tradition, because we don't associate ourselves with anybody, no matter how meritorious the situation is. All right, let's go to page 156. Anybody have? There we go.
again, George. Well, explains that in the middle. It says, yes, we of AA did dream those dreams. How natural that was, since most alcoholics are bankrupt idealists.
Bankrupt idealists, right. Well, I mean, this line could absolutely represent my own personal passion for this thing. And that is, our society of Alcoholics Anonymous might prove to be the spearhead of a new spiritual advance. We might transform the world, all right? But I see an insight there that it's not the society of Alcoholics Anonymous that has the responsibility. I can see, however, that my passion can be fulfilled by indicating that the 12 steps can in fact transform the world. And therefore my workshops are open to all people who are interested in a spiritual awakening. And it has nothing to do with Alcoholics Anonymous. It has nothing to do with the 12-step fellowship. Completely disenfranchised from any connection, except that I do use the big book and other material, and I do talk about the 12 steps because it's a codification of a methodology for spiritual conversion, all right? Completely outside the realm of AA, completely outside the realm of any 12-step fellowship at all, independently. And maybe someday I can create a vocabulary that would neutralize, actually, any potential reference to its origin so that the methodology itself will be sanitized in such a way that anybody can approach it no matter what their orientation is. Please.
Hi, Barbara Allenon.
Hi, Barbara.
Just everything. So let's see, what did I underline here? Oh, providence through A has brought us within reach of our highest expectations. So why shouldn't we share our way of life with everyone? I don't know, I loved this. I love step 6 too. It's funny, I kind of saw parallels, the detachment of power, money. Oh my God.
The character defects.
Well, yeah, because so as an Al-Anon, I have great ideas for everybody else.
And I'm sure they're anxious to hear
them.
Sure,
they want to hear what I have to say, because I know some. How big is my God? How big is their God? Obviously not very big.
Yeah, that's the answer to that. Right.
So I'm having this experience in a, it's like youth transitioning out of foster care, and this woman thinks that I'm her mentor, which cracks me up. But where I have to learn to relate in a different way, which is that I give her the dignity, I've heard it say, to have her own process and her own God and her own discovery, and it's not mine. But that puts this Alan on in a different role, which is really like trusting God, that to give her the dignity. Right. I heard in a meeting, it's like stealing someone's dignity. It's akin to stealing, like an alcoholic may steal a drug, an Al-Anon steals somebody else's dignity.
That's very nice.
Yeah, and I loved that. Yeah. And I think I loved both the 6 and 7 helped me as an Al-Anon to detach from my ego.
Yeah.
Yeah. And and my relationship with this lovely young woman is really like, it's, you talk about trust and fear. Yeah. It's like it's grown a lot deeper.
Yeah.
And it's nice to see the steps reflected in my life. Like, I feel better, you know, like, I feel like God is helping me, because I do have a big ego as an Al-Anon to think that I know what's
Or maybe
right.
just as a human being, even. I mean, I think that most of us like that, have that in some fashion. It might be masked in different ways.
But I'm helpful.
But don't stay there. But the image that helps me a lot in terms of my usefulness to other people is I'm a lantern. I'm not the light.
That's great.
I allow the light, I encourage the light to shine out through me to the path that I have walked, so that you can walk the path in the light of my experience and have your own experience. I'm not the light.
Right.
And I want you to have your experience, and I'll show you the way.
That's great. Thank you.
Huh?
That's a great metaphor.
Yeah.
I'm Sarah, food addict.
Hi, Sarah.
And I don't know if you shared this line that comes right before the providence that I just loved. We're all perfectionists who, failing perfection, have gone to the other extreme and settled for the bottle and the blackout.
Yeah.
And that's what leads us to want to do, to transform the world. Because now we have this, you know, idea of perfection. Or success with what we always were straining for before.
Yeah.
And I wanted to say something about what you were talking about before, about the kind of workshops that you do that are not particularly related to a specific fellowship. In the first line of the tradition, in the explanation, the moment we saw that we had an answer for alcoholism, the question keeps coming up for me about what is alcoholism, what is food addiction, what is gambling addiction? How important is, and I brought this up last week relative to, I guess,
singleness of purpose.
That how much of it is about the substance and how much of it is about the second part of the first step.
Right.
And I think it's because maybe more about the second part of the first step, the unmanageability of our lives, that's the way I see it, a major part of the disease that made us turn to the substance that makes us want to go out and transform the world. 'Cause not everybody has a substance, or whatever your substance is, or no substance, we've all got this human condition of an ego that's gone awry.
Yeah. Well, well said. And Bill addressed that maybe in a way that he wasn't conscious of when he said, and it's in our format in the step workshop, our way of living may have its advantages for all. And he's very clear in the text of the big book that alcohol is not the problem. Now, it is a problem if it's a problem. If you're still drinking or thinking about, in an obsessed way, drinking, then it's a problem. But you're powerless over it, so you're screwed. All right? But once you've been given the grace, perhaps by your cooperation and willingness, I don't can't explain it, and you cross over from abstinence into just living a life of abstinence, dash, that our life had become unmanageable, then you're into the heart of the matter. And he says it's a spiritual problem. That's why the steps are a methodology. He says on page 29, the steps are a methodology to find God. And so that's the human condition, and that's the rationale for the workshop, focusing on the second half of the first step. But the fellowships focus on the first half of the first step, so that people can have identification and come in for that purpose. And the problem with most meetings is they either do not understand or they do not address effectively the individuals, the second half of the first step. They either don't understand it or they don't address it because they don't know how. Yeah.
The way this, in looking over the questions on the page about the personal questions, the way this... One of the ways this affects me personally is that I'm a psychotherapist, and it could be anything. It could be, anyway, I'm a psychotherapist. And so in sponsoring people, sometimes I, hopefully sooner than later, find myself stepping over a line of a kind of materialistic way of looking at the program, thinking that I can help to solve things psychologically, mm-hmm. forgetting that this is a spiritual program. And as a sponsor, whether I'm a psychotherapist or not, it's about helping people to find their own spiritual connection and not get into the ego business and the self-importance of like doing psychotherapy.
Well, it's got to be a particularly difficult struggle for a therapist who's in the program, who has experienced the benefits of transformation from the program. And this particular tradition clearly addresses wearing two hats. And you have to remember which hat you're wearing.
Yeah.
And there's boundaries with each of them. Yeah. Nice. Thank you, Sarah. Please. Dave?
Well, I swear it wasn't a setup, but I highlighted in the last paragraph on this page, did AA fix drunks or was it an educational project?
Yeah.
Was AA spiritual or medical?
Yeah.
And I think it's just addressing the same issue that you were talking about, where, you know, are we, you know, I've heard people go into meetings and really talk about the psychological things that are going on, but it is at its roots a spiritual program.
At its roots and as its program itself. Right. The only purpose of the 12 steps, hello, the only purpose of the 12 steps is expressed by the 12th step.
Having had a spiritual awakening.
Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps.
Right.
It couldn't be any clearer, the mission.
Yeah. And then one other point that I'd like to bring up is, while this way of life may have benefits for all, as an addict, I need this way of life to save myself.
Survival.
And I think that's what makes us different from having benefits to needing it.
All right. Yeah, that's a really good point. And perhaps that's where the rubber really meets the road for a person who is addicted in any way, who finds this solution, that their very life depends on it, not just their spiritual elevation. Yeah.
Okay.
Nice. Thank you, Dave.
Nicole Al-Anon. So Sarah touched on this a bit, and so did you. It says, so why shouldn't we share our way of life with everyone? And I wrote the preface to the first edition. That was my note there. And I've heard it, I think in, was it the fifth? One of the other traditions was like part of the whole reason why this conversation came up last time is that we aren't sharing this with just anyone and we're keeping really confined to our fellowship. Yet the first edition, the preface to the first edition says that, and it says it here. So I'm just curious, and obviously it's more like what... Besides getting alcoholics sober, was this ever intended to take out into the world and share with all? Because that's what keeps coming up consistently through reading the book, the big book, through reading the traditions, and it's just that one little sentence, and it's kind of confusing for me.
I don't think it's confusing. It's about priorities, all right? I'm doing a whole discernment about priorities. It's really clear to me. My number one priority is work one-on-one with alcoholics. I do spiritual direction, and that's important work. But if it comes between doing one-on-one work with a non-alcoholic, even if they're in 12-step of any kind, and an alcoholic, the alcoholic gets first priority. Now, there's room for everybody, all right? But it helps me in terms of my prioritization.
Thank
That's
you.
All. It's just about priorities. It's not about exclusive.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Katie, alcoholic.
Hi, Katie.
I just want to go back to what... Okay.
No. Wait.
Oh. Hi. Okay, Katie, alcoholic. I want to go back to the Society of Alcoholics Anonymous proving to be the spearhead of a spiritual advance. We might transform the world. I actually think that's happening most specifically because we don't align ourselves with money.
Oh, for sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, so there's a whole power in the fact that we don't align ourselves with money.
Right.
That we have spiritual poverty, a corporate poverty, as one of the essences.
Well, it comes down to talking one-to-one, like it says in here.
People really trust you.
Corporation can't survive that way, but you can go to Korea and find a person to talk with you.
Yeah.
So,
really cool. Thank you. All right, page 157. We're moving on, maybe.
No. I'm stooping down.
No, you just just squeeze the handle.
Oh, look at that.
Yeah.
Thank you. Rob, compulsive eater. The only maybe the only line we didn't read on 156. But I don't know why
it's all good stuff.
Like this. It stood to reason that if alcoholism could be licked, so could any problem.
Yeah.
And the reason I really like that, it's almost like Bill Wilson writing this was prescient, like he had a vision. Like one day he knew there'd be 200 fellowships out there. He didn't really, but because I know the whole point was talking about AA doing this work.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know if he ever imagined that others would borrow the 12 steps and form their own fellowships. But I saw that immediately. I saw that landscape of all those fellowships out there. Yeah. And I wonder if one of the reasons, again, it works that way is, you know, another tradition, 11, that it's a program of attraction and not promotion. They didn't go out to give everyone the 12 steps.
Right.
They just were an example of
this
is a serious problem, and we've found the solution.
Yeah.
And then I don't know which, you know, problem came next in terms of 12-step fellowships or if there were any others when he wrote this. But
no, Al-Anon started in 1951.
Okay.
Yeah.
But I know, I mean, the story of OA is that the founder or co-founder of OA, she and her husband brought a friend to a Gamblers Anonymous meeting, which was a very young fellowship at that time. And, you know, she had a notion. So she went up, the founder of Gamblers Anonymous was there, and she talked to him and said, "Do you think this could help at all with eating?" Or and his answer was, "I don't see why not. Why don't you give it a try?"
Right, exactly.
You know, and the rest is history.
So, right. Yeah.
I mean, he didn't say, "Hey, you fatty, you know, you you should do so. You ought to try this."
Yeah. Yeah.
He said, "Yeah, why not?"
Yeah, absolutely. Like wonderful openness. Page 157. In no circumstances could we endorse any related enterprise, even by implication or association. All right, how about page 158? Any highlights on that page that you would like to talk about?
I'm John, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, John.
I just like this because it frames the
It's in the middle of the page, but that wasn't the whole story, for in this case, not only was an AA member to break his anonymity at the public level, he was to link the name of Alcoholics Anonymous to this particular educational project. So it's the two things. It's
right.
Not only...
Well, and it was an educational project for a liquor industry.
Right, right, right. Yeah. So, but that's the guideline, those two
that's
things.
It.
One, I'm an alcoholic, and I'm going to advocate for yeah. this other thing.
Right.
And, oh, by the way, you know, I'm going right. to attach AA to it. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I was hired as the marketing director for a treatment center some 6 years ago in the Torrance area to help them out with their marketing effort, because that's my background. And the owner was quite clear in the interview in the beginning. He said, "You've got a terrific reputation in the AA community." He said, "I would love that to cross over and help us, get clients in." I said, "Well, it might happen, but not because I say it and not because it's going to be advertised that way, because my membership in AA and the work I do in the community in AA is irrelevant to the work we do here." He got that, and it was no problem. Sarah.
Sarah, food addict. Yeah, Sarah. How do you do this? I just wanted to play with it a little bit. on page 157, did anyone say, "We of Alcoholics Anonymous could not be all things to all men, nor should we try"?
Yeah.
Boy, if that isn't a statement of self-importance and being God, you know, I don't know what is. But yeah, we think that we can be all things to all men.
Sure. Absolutely. And on page 158, he is talking about this fellow who turned down this particular position because he knew that there was an expectation that his membership in AA was to be used as part of the advertisement. But he said if he was being hired solely because of his public relations ability and knowledge of alcoholism, it would be one thing. But not because he's... Any publicity is going to be coming as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And so the final line in the closing chapter just confirms that. We could not lend the AA name to any cause other than our own. Really very straightforward, huh? Maybe I didn't touch on it.
No, I just, John Alcoholic, I'm just always impressed with this idea that the point keeps on being made that while there's a legal right to do something, there's a standard much higher.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And George is going to pass the basket. He might need some help. So anybody who wants to help him, we have three baskets for the three sections. I did take a look at Pass It On. I take a look at all the literature to see if there's any relevant references to the particular tradition that we're looking at. And this has a relevant comment on Tradition 6. Let me see if I can find it. Oh, this is about Marty Mann. As you know, the first edition of the big book published in April of 1939, the title page said, "The story of how 100 men have recovered from alcoholism, April 1939. Well, sometime later in 1939, Marty Mann, M-A-N-N, a woman, who was then being treated by Bill's own psychiatrist, Dr. Tebow, Harry Tebow, came into AA and stayed. And by the end of 1943, she had 4 years of sobriety. And she said she had attended the first session of the newly founded Yale School of Alcohol Studies, the country's first such educational program. That summer marked a turning point in her life. She became convinced that public attitudes toward the disease and its sufferers, 1943, needed to be changed, and that was her calling to work in the field of alcohol education. She particularly wanted to help women alcoholics who she felt suffered a double stigma, alcohol woman. The National Committee for Education on Alcoholism, the organization Marty founded, opened its offices in October of 1944, eventually to become the National Council on Alcoholism, received an enthusiastic endorsement from the grapevine, and in fact, on the original letterhead where she was soliciting money, she put Bill Wilson's name and Bob Smith's name as the co-founders of Alcoholics Anonymous. Well, shortly, they got a lot of pushback from the membership. Is this AA, or in your fundraising for AA, or what? There was a lot of confusion, and another tradition developed that we can't affiliate. So they took their names off of the letterhead. All right. So they learned by their mistakes. But the point here is that Marty Mann did found the National Council on Alcoholism, which is still a vibrant organization today throughout the country. All right, so how about the sixth tradition in the pamphlet illustrated? Anybody have any comments on this iceberg cartoon? Does that mean you have a comment, George? All right, we'll wait.
In the second page.
Up to the mic, please.
The last paragraph.
Speak into the mic, please.
George Barrel, alcoholic. On the second page, AA members employed by outside agencies wear two hats, but Tradition 6 cautions any such members against wearing both at once.
Yeah.
And I've had a couple of friends who were looking into this, and one of them got trained, and he said, you know what, I'm not going into this because there's a very high rate of relapse among alcoholics who become counselors, and they lose sight of the distinction between their job and their primary purpose.
Yeah.
And they go out.
Yeah. I don't know whether it's true that there's a higher rate of relapse, but there is a danger of the confusion. We mentioned it earlier, but it says it really clear here. On the job, they may be alcoholism counselors, but they are not AA counselors. At meetings, they're just AAs. They're not alcoholism experts. All right, so they have two different hats. The problem I see with addiction specialists who are certified and very professional, or counselors or therapists even, psychologists even, who are, they get all the way through school and they do all the training and all the therapy that's required of it, and they're members of AA, for instance. Because they're 8 or 10 hours a day they're spending in therapy, a lot of times with alcoholics or families of alcoholics, they get a little bit complacent about and maybe confused about the difference between their career and service. And some of them, and I know this personally for a fact, feel that they've been of service all day long and the last thing they need to do is go to a meeting or sponsor anybody. All right? Now, here's the cleanest way that I can say the distinction between a vocation, your career, and an avocation, your recovery. For your career, you are paid. For your service, you are unpaid. There's no better distinction. As long as you're being paid anything, it's not service in the 12th step genre. As long as you're being paid anything, you're not, it doesn't qualify, from my standpoint, and I believe in the spirit of the traditions, as 12 step work. It might be the best 12 step work there is in terms of helping people, but it's not within the spirit of for fun and for free, to quote Chuck C.
To come at this from a slightly different direction, this is Linda Allen on a codependent. In some of the outreach work that I do, it's constantly necessary to say to people who write to us, I see you're a psychiatrist, I see you're a therapist, and you're asking us about establishing a meeting, and we want to discourage you from that. It's necessary to enter a meeting as one among many and not to set up a meeting with yourself as the resident therapist. It's a problem we encounter frequently.
Setting up a 12-step meeting for their own purposes of treating their clients, you're saying. Yeah. And why call it 12-step? Why not just set it up and do anything you want with it and charge anything you want with it? But you don't need the flag of a 12-step meeting to establish something if you have talent.
Katie Alcoholic.
Katie.
Tell her now. On the first page, at the end of the first paragraph, and pity the poor newcomer straying into the group. We'll get around to you in a minute. I have been in business meetings where home group members are very involved with the prudent reserve or this collection or that collection, and I really appreciate the discussion.
You bet.
But it's not the place for a newcomer, and it is very distracting.
Yeah, yeah.
And it can be distracting. And I also think personally, there's nothing like money to start an argument.
Absolutely. So. Yes. Yep. Thank you. And the final paragraph on that page that has the prose on it, it says, toward outside agencies dealing with alcoholism, the A policy is cooperation, not affiliation. A group cooperates by welcoming referrals from clinics or by sponsoring AA groups in institutions. But in one area, money for a rehab was solicited at an AA meeting, implying affiliation. See, that's a no-no. In another, AA was listed among beneficiaries of a United Fund drive. No, no, no. All right? No affiliation implied or any other.
Alex, codependent.
Alex.
Going back to the professional hat versus a group member, I also have noticed that not professionally, but like when it's a process addiction, like with codependency or love addiction, I've heard people say, oh, well, I'm being of service by helping my boyfriend, or, okay. Oh, I'm being of service by spending time with my family. Mm-hmm. And I've always kind of wondered, it seems like that's two separate hats. Is that what maybe has always sat wrong with me?
It's not apples and oranges, it's apples and peanuts. It's so different. Absolutely. It has no bearing at all. Yeah. Yeah. That would qualify under practicing principles in all your affairs. Yeah.
Nicole Al-Anon. It's very rare that somebody is court ordered to go to Al-Anon, but it is less rare to be court ordered to go to AA. How is that not being affiliated with government?
It's a huge question. It's a huge question. Even some groups won't sign court cards. Because they feel, in the interpretation of the tradition, that if they're signing the court card, they're affiliating with the court system. I personally don't agree with that. But I understand the issue. All right. I've not really resolved it, so I can't comment on it. Dave?
Getting back to your discussion a few minutes ago about rehab centers that start up 12-step things, I think some of them, the motivation is, okay, we've got this person for 30 days or 60 days, whatever. What is going to be the tool that they have when they go back yep. to their community?
Absolutely.
And by setting up a 12-step and getting them familiar with it, it makes the transition back to the real world better.
Yeah.
And I can see the point of doing that.
Well, that's just good business, because you're taking a resource from the community and you're establishing some biological and psychological stability, helping the person get abstinent in the first 30 or 60 or 90 days. And then you're creating a structure for them when they go outside. So we call that 12-step friendly treatment centers. They're not 12-step centers. but they're 12-step friendly, and their goal, like the goal of the organization I'm affiliated with, their goal is to get them embedded in the 12-step community. So they bring in panels. They love to have recommendations for sponsors. They require all of the people by their first month to have a sponsor type thing.
Okay, because my home meeting is down there in Torrance at Del Amo Hospital.
Yeah, sure.
And, you know, that's just really made me comfortable going to other 12-step meetings.
Sure.
Other than that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Excellent. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, some other treatment centers have different attitudes, not many, toward the 12-step, but most of them are 12-step friendly. If you haven't looked at the AA tradition, and each of you was given a pamphlet, and if you don't have it, we have a supply of them back there. There is a wonderful but quite lengthy a couple articles on the clubs, all right, AA clubs. Of course, there's no such thing, but I guess we call them Alano clubs today, all right? And they're talking about the approach to them, how they actually developed. Originally, Bill had an AA club in New York, and then they saw the truth of the non-affiliation, and so they separated out. So if you haven't read some of that material, you might like it, if in fact you're connected to any clubs or interested in that whole issue. And then on page 20, on page 22, it talks in a very nice summary of it. AA does not sponsor projects in other fields, but if these projects are constructive and non-controversial in character, AA members are free to engage in them without criticism if they act as individuals only and are careful of the AA name. Perhaps that's it. Shall we try it? And so don't overlook the pamphlets, even though they're not organized by tradition. There's lots of segments and articles in there that represent some of the traditions. I'll try to bring those to your attention when we come to them. Oh, I have the old one. I have to get the new one. Yeah. Next time.
Hey, Herb. Oh, I really appreciate you mentioning that because I've found these articles and have been enjoying them the way. But so one little thing that was a little confusing to me, because I don't know if they mean if to take it literally or not, but at the top of 17, he writes, the 24th Street Club kept right on going and is today, obviously it's back then, it was occupied by the AA Seamen. And I don't know if that's literally means sailors who were in AA or if that's referring to something else that I
no,
don't know.
No, that would be the sea, the from the port. Yeah.
Oh, literally.
Yeah, literally.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's
yeah. Fine. Yeah. They have the kind of the same situation in San Pedro.
Do you have any idea where the acronym or name Alano came from?
I don't, but nope. It wouldn't take much imagination, right?
Yeah.
But there's alcoholic. No, I've
never,
what?
Yeah, alcoholic Al-Anon, possibly.
Yeah, they were. Yeah, there was some like that. Mm-hmm.
I think I need to Google that.
Good.
I've never been able to find a...
You'll figure it out, Tom, I'm sure. All right. All right. No, that's great. Cooperate, not endorse. For instance, we have a very active and hopefully friendly relationship with Al-Anon. It really saddens me in a meeting of AA when the mention of Al-Anon comes up that there's any type of a negative stir about that. It's just out of plain ignorance, all right? And so it would probably be good if you don't participate in that and sort of model better behavior. We cooperate. Use principles, I said here, and take the high road for attitude and action. Attitude and action, AA. Attitude and action. Use principles and take the high road. My sponsees get so tired of that. What is the principle and take the high road? Do we always have to take the high road? No. Do you want the consequences of the low road? No. Yeah, right, exactly. And then I found this from one of the pieces I was reading. Dependence is mutual, independence is equal, and the obligation is reciprocal. I'm still trying to figure out what it says, but it's a decision for interdependence and the integrity of interdependence. This reciprocal relationship in the sixth tradition. That is the proper place of money, property, power, authority, prestige. And in fact, I wrote some of the other names here: money, property, power, authority, prestige, and reputation. A phrase came to me in meditation some years ago, which I used basically as a litmus test of some of my decisions, and that is it the simplest solution, and is it necessary? Is it the simplest solution, and is it necessary? It really helps you kind of clear the ground on it. It detaches you from the ego and all of the other cultural drives that we have. Poverty of spirit. We foster true humility. The truth, reality, and a perspective. Humility is about the truth, about reality, and about perspective. Poverty of spirit fosters true humility. Detachment. All right, so let's go to question number four. What is my primary spiritual aim? And you can see that we're not necessarily just restricting it to AA, but at work and in our personal relationships. Anybody answer that question and they would like to either summarize it or read it for us? Question number four on the tradition six. I put down, establish and maintain and expand my relationship with God, my primary purpose, spiritual purpose. And number two, to transmit the message of recovery and a new way of living to alcoholics and all who want a spiritual way of life. Please, Jason.
Jason, alcoholic. Just to kind of sum up what I wrote, it seems like the ego, like whenever there's something really powerful, like I've seen it like in my church, I've seen it, the ego wants to use it, you know, for their own ambition.
Really?
I just see it all the time. And so what I wrote for C, I said my family, friends, and everything else, my family and friends are not to be used for my personal ambitions.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Whatever the power is.
Yeah.
You know, and when I look at AA, the gift is recovering from your addiction. It's not a gift to get a good job or to build a homeless shelter or to... And so when you try...
To establish a relationship.
Yeah. Yeah. Or find it. Yeah. Yeah. Although that's what we can use it for. But
there's nothing wrong with it, but it's not your primary purpose.
It's not the primary purpose, you know? And so it's... And I've just seen other things get watered down, muddied, and then ultimately destroyed by that. So
yeah, thank you. Well, let's move on to question number five. Write a paragraph about these questions. How my thinking may be affected by grandiosity. Do I project my recovery experience into how other matters in my life should develop? Grandiosity. Anybody have any issue with that? All right, yeah. But we weren't going to take a roll call.
Do the wave.
This is our spokesperson.
And you're going to actually laugh. Okay, I hope. Nicole Al-Anon. I'm not affected by grandiosity currently. Not that I'm aware of anyway. I'm quite comfortable as I am. And then I called my sponsor today. And it was very clear to me that I am totally affected by grandiosity. What I have today that I didn't have before is the ability to shut my mouth and say and do nothing.
Yeah.
Until I get to a place where I can approach it with humility.
Yeah. Yeah. And have a sense of humor about it like you did. That's right. No, really. Grandiosity is always lurking underneath all my thinking, feelings, and actions. But prayer and transparent accountability are the two methods of intervention. To be rigorously honest with myself and others about my motives is an operating goal. My recovery and spiritual awakening is the total benchmark by which I make or try to make all my decisions.
Great. It's Katie Alcoholic again, and actually I've got lots of hats in the 12 steps. But what I was interested in here, yes, I am a recovering know-it-all, too. So that's sort of grandiosity. But it was interesting, the question, do I project my recovery experience into how other matters in my life should develop? I saw that in a different way because I practice recovery tools in all my life as
right.
best as I can,
sure.
including the practice of letting go of expectations.
Yes.
So it sort of saw it in a different way.
Right, right. Well, and that's what I think the spirit of practice principles in all our affairs. All right. Now, Bill never did give us a list of principles, but of course, many people have created lists of principles connected to some of the steps. I've taken those and attempted to wordsmith them into a legitimate and logical connection to each of the steps, which you have. And we also have the principles underneath the traditions that, and we'll look at that in a little minute here.
Linda, Al-Anon and Codependent.
Linda.
I'm not sure about this, but what I wrote was, yesterday I fairly trotted up to the store, and by the time the staff was checking out my purchases, I began to jerk and twitch. Did I try too hard? Did I do too much? Or, you know, am I just unaccustomed to exercise? So there goes my grandiosity. One short walk does not walk off a lifetime of overeating and inactivity. So, but what I had to say to the staff, these two gals were looking at each other like, what's with her? And I just had to say, ladies, I jerk and twitch. There's nothing I can do about it. You know, so, yeah. You know, great ideas.
Humor will cover an awful lot of deficiencies. Absolutely. So the AA principle of, well, not the AA, scratch that. The Herb list of principles for step six is willingness. And the principle for the tradition, as I've interpreted, is that poverty of spirit or humility, which is a counteraction to power, property, prestige, and authority, as we saw. And the action that's required is non-affiliation. I also handed out the spiritual substance of anonymity is a sacrifice. And in the area of tradition six, we give up complexity in order to have simplicity. At least this is my thinking at some point of making those kinds of analysis and contrasts.
So what do you mean by poverty of spirit? That doesn't sound like a good thing to me.
Is it what?
Well, we've
actually talked about that earlier.
No, I know, and it didn't sound like a good thing
then. Okay. Well, all right. Since it doesn't sound right to you, the intent of poverty of spirit, Bill uses it in the literature, poverty of spirit means detachment from the prestige and authority and money. All right, detachment from it. It's a very Buddhist principle, a very deeply spiritual principle. When I was in the monastery, I had three vows, poverty, chastity, and obedience. It didn't mean that we didn't handle money, all right? It did mean in obedience that we, you know, took direction from the authorities. And of course, chastity is pretty straightforward, right? But the poverty was detachment from it, not acquisition, not attachment to it.
So poverty as a spiritual principle.
Correct. Poverty of spirit.
Poverty of spirit means not much spirit.
Oh, no. I see what you're saying. Yeah, no.
You're poor.
Yeah, no. This means corporate poverty, the spirit of poverty, not poverty of spirit in that sense, right? I hear what you're saying, yeah. Yeah, that would be horrible. All right, number 7. In sharing the solution I have found in the 12 steps, how do I talk? How do I walk? Sure. Yes.
Did you do 6?
The what?
Did you do 6?
Did I do what?
Question 6. You
skipped 6. I did skip 6. Well, thank you. All right. Write a paragraph about these questions. How do I take others' compliments on my sharing of my message? Do they make me feel above the rest? Do I acknowledge God's grace and AA's love, or do I take credit for it? All right. Item number 6. Anybody have a comment?
Nicole Al-Anon, what does that look like for you? Because one of the things that's hard coming into Al-Anon is taking a compliment in general.
Yeah.
And so I'm just learning how to do that.
I keep it real simple. I just say thank you.
Well, but what goes on inside the head? That's different.
Do you have 2 hours you can expand on what you're saying? That's what goes on here.
There you go.
Yeah. It used to be 4 hours. So I've made a substantial improvement. Are you getting up here, Kim?
Yes. Well, I just wanted to add on to that because that is my experience currently. You know, you're in meetings and you're sharing. And for me, how that works is I still get that rub of, oh God, they're giving me a compliment, but I realize it's just my experience and the message.
Yeah.
And so there's almost like a pause in that. And so sometimes I have to pray when I'm doing it because I can feel my ego firing up, you know, so I'm saying I'm not less than, I'm not more than, you know, while someone's talking to me, just because I want to feel that rooted spiritual kind of process as opposed to my ego going, well, there you go. You got it now, you know, and it's just like that back and forth.
Yeah.
Head
How
game.
Perceptive of you. Do you see my talents? Yeah, really.
Thank you for a series of questions that really sort of ties it in a knot. You know, if you come in, it's Linda, Al-Anon, and Coda, you come in feeling less than and unable to accept a compliment, and hearing something as simple as, you know, say thank you is one thing, but then, as you said, what goes on? So when it said, the last question, do I take credit for it? You know, I'm still struggling with not hating you for giving me a compliment that I don't trust or believe.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. All right. Deal with it. Keep coming back.
I always feel weird sharing more than once because I'm used to the format of the meetings where it's like the beeper's going to go off and I got my one and now like I'm up here, like I feel like I'm doing a show. Like, that's just my head noise. But the word in that, there was two things, was grace. It's been a word that's always kind of been a hard one for me because I often think,
is gift, unearned.
It is. It's unearned. There's nothing that, like, I have other people in my family, in my life that, you know, and here's the ego, right? Of course they'd benefit. But, and I, even walking by someone on the street, that could be me, totally.
Yeah.
And so I have no idea where it comes from, how it works, but I really feel like I have been graced.
Yeah.
And so then it's not any, I mean, it's weird because yes, I have willingness, but the willingness is a grace in a way. It's not.
And bingo.
And so I often feel like a little weird sometimes even, and which is like sharing, which is, cause it is, I feel like I don't know if that makes any sense.
It makes total sense. And the two responses that I have, one is humility because I didn't earn it. I didn't deserve it. And I'm really grateful. So the other is gratitude. Yeah. Humility and gratitude. I can't explain it. No. I can observe it and I can, you know, enjoy it. Yeah. Exactly. Thank you. Please. Up here. You're not an exception.
This is embarrassing because I think sometimes I feel like I do earn the grace because I've worked hard in this program. I've worked it so hard.
Yeah. No, I understand that. And you know what? You can actually, I totally respect taking credit for the work that you've done. I've worked my ass off in this program. Absolutely. Very consistently over 30-year period. Absolutely. And the benefits are there, but the benefits are disproportionate to my contribution. There's way more in it for me than I've ever contributed. Yeah. So it's wonderful to take credit for it. Absolutely. In that sense, in the biggest perspective. Humility is about perspective. It's about the truth. It's about reality. Yeah, the Big Book has a wonderful observation in its preface forward to the second edition. It has a paragraph that says, 50% of those who really tried get it right away, 25% get it very quickly thereafter. Do the math. This is 1955. He said 75% of the people, but now here's the caveat, the qualifier, who really tried. I wonder what that means. I think it means exactly what Richard said, and that is who worked the steps and who were then consistent living in steps 10, 11, and 12, our way of life. I mean, that's the formula. All right. Well, thank you again. We had a wonderful, engaging, spirited discussion. We didn't get through all of the questions, but I'm assuming that you do reflect on them and do some work in them, especially the ones from the grapevine, which we didn't touch tonight. And we'll go on to Tradition 7 next week. Our respective 12-step fellowships help their members maintain their personal recovery and encourage them to offer to share their recovery experience freely with others who may have a similar problem. This we owe to our fellowship's future, to place our common welfare first, to keep our fellowship united. For on unity depends our lives and the lives of those to come. When anyone anywhere reaches out for help, we want the hand of our fellowship always to be there. And for that, we are responsible. After a moment of silence, please join me in the prayer of St. Francis. Lord, make me a channel of thy peace, that where there is hatred, I may bring love, that where there is wrong, I may bring the spirit of forgiveness, that where there is discord, I may bring harmony, that where there is error, I may bring truth, that where there is doubt, I may bring faith, that where there is despair, I may bring hope, that where there are shadows, I may bring light, that where there is sadness, I may bring joy. Lord, grant that I may seek rather to comfort than to be comforted, to understand than to be understood, to love than to be loved. For it is by self-forgetting that one finds, it is by forgiving that one is forgiven, it is by dying that one awakens to eternal life. Amen. See you next week.
We hope you've enjoyed this recording. To obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.